Hello, today's podcast contains swearing. Several of the worst kinds. Not the very worst, but the second worst kind. Fuck.
I added one more podcast to the giant podcast bin. Now you have plucked that podcast out and started listening.
I took my microphone and found some human folk. Then I recorded all the noises while we spoke.
My name is Adam Buxton, I'm a man.
I want you to enjoy this, that's the plan.
Hey, how you doing? Adam Buxton here. Thank you so much for joining me for another podcast. I'm just out walking Rosie the dog out here in East Anglia, and the sun is going down. Very beautifully, I might add. It's crazy, it's so colourful, and the clouds are all scattered around like someone's thrown a box of cotton wool into the sky and it's stuck there. Today, the podcast features a conversation with Scroobius Pip, a UK rapping man, a rapist. You've got to use the double P there, otherwise you can get into unpleasant confusion areas. And he is someone, he took his name from an Edward Lear poem and has so far failed to give it back. And as well as being a rapping guy, he is also a much loved podcast host. Not only that, but his podcast, Distraction Pieces, is on the same platform as this one, Acast. It just worked out that way. It wasn't planned by corporate nabobs. All right? Just to take the edge off the whole appearance of incestuous backslappery and insider chicanery. All right, calm down. If you haven't listened to Scroobius's podcast before, I do recommend it. He's had insightful and enlightening chats with the likes of Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, and Russell Brand, and Gail Porter. That's a good one. She tells a very candid story about her travails in the entertainment world and in her personal life. Sarah Pascoe is on there, Dylan Moran, Mike Skinner of The Streets, Roots Maneuver, Stuart Lee, Tom Robinson. He's got loads on there, I tell you. So check them out. And actually, next week, I'm going to be on there. So that does nothing to dispel the notion of incestuous insider backslappery, does it? But there you go. I first became aware of Scroobius in 2007 when I saw the video for his track Thou Shalt Always Kill, which he created with Dan Lesac, his musical partner. Sometime musical partner, I guess I should say.
Thou shalt not steal if there is a direct victim. Thou shalt not worship pop idols or follow lost prophets. Thou shalt not take the names of Johnny Cash, Joe Strummer, Johnny Hartman, Desmond Decker, Jim Morrison, Jimi Hendrix or Sid Barrett in vain. Thou shalt not think any male over the age of 30 that plays with a child that is not their own is a paedophile. Some people are just nice.
Thou shalt always kill? What are you talking about? That's the opposite of the guidelines I was given. And it's a polemic, I suppose you could say, in rap form that throws up all kinds of apparent contradictions and outrageous statements. And I chat to him about that later on, as well as covering quite a few of my favourite subjects like forgetting people's names, stuttering in relation to Scroobius's own stutter, rudeness, online rudeness and rudeness elsewhere, and one of my favourite topics, of course, podcasting. And we also mention, inevitably, Marc Maron and WTF. He's got quite a few mentions in just a short run, hasn't he? And during the podcast, I struggled to remember the name of Marc Maron's invaluable producer. It is, of course, Brendan McDonald. Anyway, hope you enjoy this chat, and I'll be back to say goodbye later on. Here we go.
Thank you. There we go.
Is that all working perfectly?
That's all good.
Lovely.
Perfect. You like to do the, do you like to do the podcast thing of having the audio running for a while as people are getting ready?
Yeah, I often have that.
Bleed into the beginning of the thing.
I realised I felt it was kind of quite natural, and then I realised that pretty much everyone starts from me going, so, that's the beginning. Yeah. We've not really got a start.
Have we started?
And that's literally everyone. In my mind on the day, it's always been spontaneous and natural, and then turns out they all start exactly the same way.
It's funny how fast cliches and tropes develop within a new medium.
Yeah, and it's weird. Because I listen to loads and loads of podcasts, I'm really a massive fan of the genre, that I then end up emulating the exact things that are, you know, it doesn't help that it bleeds through that now I'm copying this podcast's weaknesses, or not weaknesses, but yeah, tropes.
Which ones get in your head? Have you had phases where a podcaster has got right into your mind and it's, it becomes almost like being haunted?
Yeah, A Joe Rogan Experience is one that I listened to.
You've been on that, right?
I've been on it now, and I was excited when John Ronson was on it. So that's a three-way crossover now, as he's been on yours and mine and on Joe Rogan's.
I know, everyone's on everyone else's.
But it was really pleasing because it was a little while after I'd had him on mine, and it turned into a two-parter on my one, and Joe Rogan's are always 3 hours long. And I was like, right, this is going to be pretty much the same stories as I've just listened to. And it wasn't. John's just amazing. He's just got so many stories. He's just such an interesting guy. So, yeah, the Joe Rogan one, because, again, it's that thing. It's 3 hours long, and he does a couple a week. And I don't listen to them all now, but there was a point where I was listening to them all, so I was giving over 6 hours a week of my mind to Mr. Joe Rogan. And
he's going off on some crazy rants about all sorts of edge of reality stuff.
That's what I really liked about it.
Not edge of reality, but edge of, well, I mean, he's into his conspiracies and stuff.
There's some conspiracy theory stuff. He's also really, really into debunking conspiracy theories. Uh-huh. So it's quite good on that he'll be like, that's nonsense, you're an idiot. He has a friend on who's a guy I know as well, Eddie Bravo, who's real conspiracy theorist. And it's so fun to listen to Eddie spend 10 minutes explaining something and then Joe destroy it in a second or two. But that's what I like about the podcast, is they'll go to the furthest outer reaches of discussing space with Brian Cox and all sorts. They'll go completely internal and on a molecular level and a psychological level, but then they'll also have an episode where they're just making a lot of dick jokes and fart jokes and being ridiculous. So I love that weird mix of, in one episode you could get all those things. It's kind of, I like, there's not the pretentiousness, but it's also not just kind of a lads club type thing.
And what's he like? Is he quite an intense guy, I would imagine?
Yeah, he is quite intense. It's weird because, again, it's always slightly odd when you're a big fan of the podcast that you're going on. I've listened to all the Adam and Joe ones for years. So equally, you know, unusual. But on that, he'd just recorded a three-hour one with someone else and was going straight into our one.
Whoa.
So was doing 6 hours off the bat. So had been drinking a lot of coffee, was smoking a lot of weed.
Yeah.
And it was one of them.
A lot of weed?
And I don't smoke weed or drink coffee. So it was instantly, he was like, here, do you want to hear this? I'm like, no, thank you. And instantly I thought, oh my God, I feel like I'm killing the rhythm of what's happening.
You wouldn't
happening.
Think that weed was the best for sharpening your mind for a 6 hour chat-a-thon.
But again, that the kind of for making a 10-minute conversation last an hour, maybe you would say weed is the perfect the perfect tool for that.
But would anyone else want to listen to that conversation? That's the question.
Well, they seem to. He seems to be well practiced in managing that that intake of drugs.
And how about Maron? I've spoken about Maron to John Ronson before.
He's amazing.
Also on that show.
He's amazing. I can only listen to a couple of months with Maron because I find them so intense and often so dark that I love it, but I really, it affects me. It genuinely, I remember, it reminds me of the first time I played a Call of Duty and I was on my own and I played it for like a couple of hours and I came out feeling like I had
killed some guys.
Humans. I had PTSD. Like, I was genuinely like, I feel quite shaken up because it was so intense and so everything happening at once.
Yeah.
That was like, that's not the kind of game I want to play, I don't think. Because it really, not that I'm against the violence or anything else, but it genuinely had my nerves on such a level. I love violence. It's great. but yeah, I feel that with with Mark that I think it's one of the best. Obviously, it's a trailblazer. He had Obama on.
Mm.
He had the President of America I know, in his garage on his podcast.
He hasn't shut up about it since.
Yeah, true, exactly. It's hard to not know about that. But but yeah, I think it's great, but I can't handle irregular doses because he's such an intense dude.
You can get over-marinated.
Yes, you can. You can get so over-marinated quite quickly. It's quite a poignant and strong flavour.
I think it's, in a way, it's sort of brave of... I don't know how you found it being in the podcast world and having a little group of... people that yeah. are into your stuff, because it is a medium by its nature that really gets under your skin and yeah. gets into your head, and you can become over-marinated
yeah.
quite easily, regardless of the host. And then I think people really start... Well, I certainly, when I'm listening to other people's shows,
yeah.
I'm really thinking about... I'm trying to get into their mind.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, he's... Well, he's being a little bit, he's sort of bragging a little bit there. He should pull back on that. Or, 100%. Oh, no, he should be more confident. Or, oh, no, he's flirting with this woman a little bit too much. Or
yeah.
all that kind of stuff.
I couldn't agree more. I've just had that recently where in all the early podcasts, the compliment I got a lot was how little I talked in many ways. I'd sit back and just let the guest talk. And kind of, 'cause, and again, Mark gets the opposite of that sometimes, and Joe Rogan, all of these get told off for talking too much. And then in the last few, I've had a few tweets from people saying, you kept interrupting and wouldn't let them talk. And I'm sure I don't, because it's such a natural conversation. It's often with people I know, but then that plays on your mind constantly. And in all the ones after that, I'm just like... struggling to concentrate on the conversation because I'm thinking, is that important enough to say? No, I won't say that. I'll stay quiet because I don't want to. Because again, you've just instantly been you've got that over analysis of how you're performing.
Yeah. Well, it's been established on my podcast that I'm too eager to please.
Yep.
And so I'm trying to.
That was a wonderful, wonderful email. I thoroughly enjoyed that.
It was good, wasn't it? I'm going to meet the guy.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
He's going to come to one of my shows. And then I will that's be great. Able to kill him.
Yeah, that's perfect. I'm doing...
With my bare hands.
By the time this goes out, it will have happened. But tomorrow, I'm doing my first live one of these.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought I'd have a guest. I'm going to have a lot of audience questions, but I thought I'd have a guest. And the guest is a fan of mine who's been to over 70 of my shows.
Oh, have you met him before?
I have met him before. And I'm sure it will come out in the conversation, but... I started noticing him at shows and we were genuinely a little bit worried because this guy was turning up a lot. Gradually his beard was getting bigger. He started to buy the same brand of trucker cap as me.
Oh, wow.
And we were a little bit like, this is weird. And then the weird thing was I went to see Public Enemy at Brixton Academy and I hadn't tweeted about it or anything. And I noticed him in the crowd and that relaxed me because it made me go, oh, actually, he's just a
he's
fan
into
of
other
geeks.
Stuff.
He's just into music.
Yeah.
It's not that he's always... He just likes music. So that relaxed me. And then, yeah, I've chatted to him a bit. Because again, if you're turning up at 70-odd shows, it's hard not to build a bit of a relationship.
Yes.
So,
well, it was
interesting, Keith Clark.
When you were talking to Tom Robinson, I listened to your podcast with him, very much enjoyed it. And I was interested to hear him talking about how much time he spent responding to Tom Robinson band fans.
Yeah.
And he was implying that it was perhaps to the detriment of his songwriting.
Yeah. Completely eager to please.
Yeah,
was the thing that came across.
Because there's nothing wrong with being eager to please. Like I stand by my eagerness to please. The question is, when does it go too far? When are you too eager to please?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because
you should be eager to please.
Well, it that says in my jingle, you know, I want you to enjoy this, and I do want people to enjoy. I want to make an entertaining show. It's not my mission is not to antagonize.
Yeah.
And to infuriate.
Exactly.
It's to entertain. So that's my personal thing. But sometimes you can spend too long looking at the tweets and looking at the messages on SoundCloud and thinking about them and worrying about them and then looking at the stats on Acast. Now you and I are both on the Acast platform. And you get to look at the breakdown.
Such good breakdowns of which day this happened.
Who's listening where in the world and what. You can see absolutely everything. And you can go too far on it. And it can just make you too self-conscious, don't you think?
Yeah, completely.
Because I bet you the genius thing about Maron, for example, to return to him, is that he is part of a super successful partnership doing that podcast. His producer, whose name I forget.
Yeah, I can't remember.
No disrespect to him. But actually, talking about the Obama one, the follow-up episode of that was him and his producer talking about the whole process of putting that episode together. And you find a lot more out about their relationship and how the podcast is made in the course of listening to that. But he is a very valuable and important bit of the what the fuck puzzle.
Yeah.
Because not completely, only does he edit all those. And,
particularly in that episode, just hearing how much he was, how Maron at one point wasn't keen to do it, and just so much how he's been such a key part of it, yet he's so behind the camera.
It's
such.
Like a manager. He's doing the same job as a talent manager or something in many ways, as well as overseeing the content of the show. You know, he's helping to book guests and he's keeping Mark's mind on the straight and narrow and encouraging him and enabling Mark Maron to concentrate just on the interviews and not have to worry about all the peripheral stuff.
Do you think we could get him to leave Mark and take on both of us in place of Mark? Because that sounds like what we need, really. Someone, a middleman, someone in between.
Honestly, listening to the post-Obama episode, it seems unlikely.
Yeah.
He almost started crying, the producer guy.
Yeah.
Because he was so, it was like, I get the feeling from Mark Maron that he's maybe thinking about coming towards the end or having a hiatus, you know. And the interviewing the president provided kind of a watershed, a full stop.
Yeah.
For at least one part of that trajectory.
Completely.
Why do you do it? Why are you into podcasting?
Part of it was, again, it's that pretty much everything I've done in my career, it's been things that I've been really into, and then I've had a moment of going, that looks doable. Like doing music came from going to loads of gigs, and in one month I saw the Beastie Boys and the Bloodhound Gang, which quite different acts, but still it was standing at both of them and being amazed, but then also going, I could probably do something similar to that. That feels achievable. And it was the same with podcasts. It was listening and then going, hang on, I've met some quite interesting people in my 8 years of doing music. I've got some contacts. I could probably do a podcast. The interesting part is I always get praised for taking on these things, like my XFM show and podcast, for taking them on despite having a stutter. But the fact is, I just forget I've got a stutter. So I'd started doing the podcast and arranged it all, and I was like, it wasn't until the first review was like, and it's very bold to take on a purely spoken media when you've got a speech impediment. I was like, oh yeah, that's a thing, isn't it? I've got that. So,
how long have you had your stutter?
Since
do you mind me asking you about it?
No, I'm always happy to talk about it. Yeah. I find them absolutely fascinating because we don't understand them at all. It's such a weird thing that it's just in your head, something is restricting me saying certain sounds or words. That's mental.
Because I don't know anything about what causes stuttering.
They generally come from a traumatic experience.
So it's a psychological
thing. It is a psychological thing, it would seem. So when I was four, I almost drowned on holiday in France. And I started to get my stutter. And I didn't find out that was the reason until I had hypnosis at about, I think I was about 14 or 15.
And you were hypnotized specifically to investigate the stutter.
Specifically to investigate the stutter and try and help with that. I kind of got regressed to that kind of moment of almost drowning, which was bizarre because my parents at the time had done a brilliant job of playing it down. So in my mind, it wasn't that big a deal. I always remember my dad saying, just going, oh, ruin my trainers, because he came out and saved me, and I just remember him going on about his trainers are ruined now, but that was just to calm me and make me not overreact to it.
And you were how old again?
It's about four, I think. I was four, goodness. And it was in France.
And you just swam out too far, and the current got you.
We were walking along the beach, and I'd kind of drifted back, I think.
Yeah, because you wouldn't be swimming at four.
Yeah, no, I drifted back, and just a big wave just came up out of nowhere, just
pulled you out.
Took me straight out.
Oh, that's terrifying.
And it was interesting because through the hypnosis I learned, because for years as a kid I had a recurring dream about a witch in my living room, and I'm in bed upstairs, and this witch is coming up the stairs, and I know it's coming. I'm trying to scream and I can't, and then it's coming close, and it's the most petrifying thing, just not being able to scream. And she kind of said how that tied into my stutter and tied into the nearly drowning, because through the regression, she was saying, what's happening there is when I was pulled out to sea, I'm trying to scream to my parents and waves are going in my mouth, so I can't scream. So it took me a moment to get anyone's attention. And that's what caused that. That's what that recurring dream about a witch was, apparently.
Mm.
But yeah, it's fascinating. I did a thing on YouTube about a technique I got shown, because there's a comedian who I've had on the podcast now whose name I always stutter when I try and say it, and it's Dylan Moran.
Oh, yeah.
And I just, for some reason, it's been one that I can't say.
But that's you don't stutter at all D words.
Not all D words. D's and W's are my...
They're tricky.
Are the toughest ones. But right. Again, it's not all. And this guy taught me a technique of tapping out syllables on your leg. So just a finger for each syllable and tapping it out. And doing that, I can say Dylan Moran. Dylan Moran, Dylan Moran,
and
quite comfortably.
You are tapping your fingers,
but without
yeah.
that, I get stuck with it.
Right.
And again, stuff like that, it's like, that's mental. That we have no, we can't really explain why that helps it. And
that's often what it comes down to, though, isn't it? Is learning techniques to yeah. deal with little hang-ups you have.
Yeah, completely.
Whether they are manifesting themselves, obviously, in the form of a stutter or yeah. some other kind of speech impediment, or just in the form of some kind of hang-up that stops you doing the things that would otherwise yeah. improve your life.
Completely.
And you can just learn little tricks. That's one of the fascinating things about Darren Brown, is that he seems to be someone in command of this
yeah.
colossal armory of tricks
yeah.
that will help you with all kinds of
triggers
things.
And tricks yeah. and techniques.
So the one for me, I downloaded a thing he did about remembering people's names.
Right.
And that's something that I have a real problem with.
Same, yeah.
And my wife gets infuriated because she thinks that it's laziness, and she thinks that I just don't remember her friends' names
because I'm
not sufficiently friendly.
Don't care enough of it. Yeah.
You know, or I think they're boring or yeah. something, which I don't. But I do just find it hard to remember people's names, and it gets worse the older you get, you know. Have you got any tricks for...
Not for remembering names. I'm terrible at it. I've just done my first TV series. And in that situation, because I'm not in every episode and I'm on and off, I'm here every now and then.
What show is
I'm
that?
I'm meeting so many people. It's called The Bastard Executioner.
Uh-huh.
And it's written by Kurt Sutter, who did Sons of Anarchy. And it's this big thing. It's currently on FX in America.
Oh, this is a narrative thing?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Cool. So I'm just acting in it, and it's my first role, and it's all very exciting. But on that was exactly that, because there's 3 or 4 people in the costume team that you're regularly interacting with, 3 or 4 people in makeup. And because everyone else was maybe there from the start, there's not as much urgency or thought to introduce so much. So there's a lot of people I've met that I might have caught their name a bit and then not. And then you've spent a few days with them, so you feel awkward being, so who's that? Who's that again? And again, yeah, I've been terrible for that. It was the wrap. It wrapped on Friday. And there were numerous people that I was like...
So what's your technique?
Not quite sure. I haven't got one. That's it. I'm failing miserably. Darren Brown's technique?
Darren Brown has a whole complicated thing about, I think, constructing what's called a... this is the other problem, of course, is that you've got to remember the technique. he does a thing called, I think it's a memory cathedral or a memory palace or something like that. And so you... Well, this is a technique for remembering things you have to do, like a shopping list, for example.
Yep.
You could take all the items on the shopping list and assign them to different rooms in a fictional house in your mind.
Right.
So I've got to get full fat cream, put that in the kitchen. I've got to get a new toothbrush, put that in the living room or something. And you picture where those objects are so that when you are going to the supermarket or whatever, you can walk through this palace, this space you've constructed in your mind. And the act of having assigned all these objects to different spaces will replay itself and allow you to see those things again and recall them.
Yeah.
Because all you're trying to do is trigger your mind's efforts to recall these things. You know? So similarly, when you are introduced to someone and you want to remember their name, you have to take a moment to create a little mnemonic, a visual mnemonic in your mind. So, for example, if I'd never met you before, I mean, Scroobius Pip is kind of an easy name to remember.
It's one that sticks.
What's your real name?
David.
What's your surname?
David Meads.
So, David Meads. So, I would picture my brother David and then... Meads, I would imagine him holding a tankard of mead.
Perfect.
Maybe two tankards of mead, so that it's meads.
Yep, so you get that S, that all-important S.
Yeah, so then the next time I see you, that image pops into my mind. I know he's David, and I know, what's he doing with those two tankards? Ah, yes, it's mead. It's,
David Beers.
Yeah. Yeah. Brother Beers. Hey, Brother Beers, good to see you. So that, but then, of course, you have to have the presence of mind
to do that in the moment.
To do that. And there's often you're introduced to a few people, you're kind of jangly anyway.
Yeah.
You forget to do that, and you're like, oh, that's got away from me now, and I'm going to have to spend the rest of the evening going, hey, man.
It makes you great at remembering names, but terrible at engaging and socialising. Yeah. Is that someone introduces you and you just stare at them?
That's right.
You're thinking of
you're looking of very distracted. Shut up, yeah. I'm constructing a memory palace.
Got this one. On to the next one. Bye-bye. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. But
yeah, it's awful. And have you ever been... Because for me, the nightmare scenario, I guess, is to be called on it. And for it to be implied that you care so little about someone that you haven't remembered their name.
I've never had someone unsympathetic enough to highlight that they've realised that I've not remembered their name.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. I'm sure there's been ones where they've known. I've gone, hey, man. Or, hey, guy. Hey.
Yeah.
Hey, you. So, yeah, I've never been called out on it as such. But I'm sure people have noticed at points.
And you always want, I always feel like I want to communicate to them, you know, I've got such a strong, positive memory of you. I know who you are.
Yeah.
I know what you mean to me. I know where we met. And,
I know you.
Yeah.
I don't know the label they put on you.
Exactly.
I know you.
That's right. And you want to say that to them, but there's no way of saying that without it sounding...
Because they've started to walk away and you can't call their name to get them back.
You mean a lot to me. I remember a lot about you, just not your name.
It's what I love about South by Southwest, because... At that festival, everyone gets a name tag.
Yeah.
And it's just perfect because it's so good. And everyone's aware of it, that you meet someone like, hi, John, good to see you.
Yeah.
John from XFL, you know, or whatever else it is. It's like, it'd be so much easier if life was like that. Or like on computer games when they have the name and age and everything just floating above their head. That'd be ideal.
I'd love it. Just branded onto your forehead.
Yeah.
Because then with the tags... If it's a woman, you don't want to look as if you're staring down at her breastal region.
True, true.
That's not cool.
Or it gives you a good excuse to stare down at her breastal region as the other.
I suppose.
We're halfway through the podcast. I think it's going really great. The conversation's flowing like it would between a geezer and his mate.
All right, mate.
Hello, geezer. I'm pleased to see you.
Ooh. There's so much chemistry, it's like a science lab of talking.
I'm interested in what you said.
Thank you.
There's fun chat and there's deep chat, it's like Chris Evans is meeting Stephen Hawking.
The Clash, just a band. Crass, just a band. Minor Threat, just a band. The Cure, we're just a band. The Smiths, just a band. Nirvana, just a band. The Pixies, just a band.
Dan Lassac, it was the first thing that we did together, and it was crazy because we made the video for a couple of £100. I recorded the vocal originally in my bedroom at my mum's house, and it was our first single, and it felt, there was a bit of guilt attached, because everyone always talks about how you have to graft for years and years in the music industry and all this, and we wrote a one song and it got in the top 40. And
that's the net age for you.
We have then grafted and gigged constantly and all that kind of thing, but it did feel at that point as like,
this is easy.
This music industry lark's easy, isn't it? You write a song, that goes down well. You write some more, that goes down well. I don't know what everyone's complaining about.
And so were you actually able to make a little bit of money off that and everything?
Yeah. We did our first album. And the first album, we were just in time for when you could make money off records, which has died pretty much now because no one likes to pay for stuff. Or make money in a traditional way off records rather than sinking or anything else or in films and all the different ways there are to make money now. So we made a bit of money, but then we toured constantly as well, and it was always that thing for us of a lot of people at that point, particularly in the MySpace wave, which we were part of that initial bubble, a lot of people have kind of an internet hit and then go, I've made it, cool. But we were adamant, no, we're now going to be doing at least 100 shows a year every year, in the UK and Europe and America and everywhere we can, just to make sure we're building that real fan base. Because the memory of going to a gig and seeing something exciting and engaging is far more than something that's on your phone, that there'll be something new in its place next week. And you know what I mean? It can become that bit more disposable. Whereas having that real engagement with your fan base and building that is why we've always had great live turnouts and great, yeah, engagement in that manner.
And I presume you spend a long time going back to the video on YouTube and checking the comments.
Constantly. No. Sure. Again, it's my general rule became quite quick to avoid the comments on YouTube constantly, part because they're often horrible and part I didn't want any spoilers if I was attending a bug. I wanted it to be a surprise. I didn't want to already know what was coming. But yeah.
Have you come to Bug before?
Yes, I've come cool. A couple of times now. Yeah, I love it.
So for those who haven't been, that's a reference to the fact that in Bug, as well as in other media now, I often read out comments that people have left on YouTube. And I was looking at the comments for Thou Shalt Always Kill. I'm not going to read out a whole bunch of them, but a couple caught my eye. Actually, a couple of quite good ones, because that's the thing, is that sometimes people leave quite funny comments there as well.
You have
to search harder for those. but there's a lot of comments under that one. And a song like Thou Shalt Always Kill, which is open to all kinds of interpretation, provokes a huge amount of discussion on there. Some people speculating as to, you know, what you're talking about, or some people who think they know what you're talking about and are angry about it.
Yeah.
What does he mean, Thou Shalt Always Kill? Here's a comment from Renegade 89, who goes on a riff and it picks up the baton, and this is his own version of the thing. So it's not really commenting on what you've said so much. Thou shalt not YOLO. Thou shalt not totes. Thou shalt not Harlem Shake. Thou shalt not duck face. What's duck face?
No idea.
I've heard of those other ones. Thou shalt not selfie. Thou shalt not spam my Facebook notifications with every mundane detail of your, quote, amazing life. Thou shalt know ab everything. Abbreviate everything.
Brilliant.
Thou shalt learn to spell, in caps. Thou shalt not perpetuate stupid memes derived from simple-minded themes. I don't care how funny you think it seems, no one cares.
That rhymed quite nicely, didn't it? It had a nice flow.
Thou shalt not post videos of cats. The whole internet would crumble, you moron. Thou shalt not wear stupid animal hats. What's that one? Is everyone wearing stupid animal hats?
Not that I've noticed.
I haven't noticed that. Thou shalt not bit strip. What's bit strip?
I have no idea what bit... No, that's the cartoons. You make the little cartoons of yourself. I do know bit strip.
Right. He says in brackets, your lives are no more entertaining in animated form. You're spelt YOU apostrophe RE, of course.
After the thou shalt not make spelling mistakes.
Yeah. And thou shalt always message back, even if you don't like me. At least say so. So that was quite an articulate and entertaining message from Renegade 89
It should have been a letter he wrote to someone in particular. Like a specific rant. There seems to be some very specific anger and argument there. Yeah. So,
how did the lyrics for Thou Shalt Not Kill come together for you? Was it a aggregation of ideas that you had knocking around anyway, things that wound you up?
Kind of. It was just using a familiar construct. So it was when I was doing a lot more like open mics and spoken word gigs, because I thought, right, I can have the bones of a poem here, or a piece, or whatever you want to call it, but then I can also react to what other people have said that night, or what's been in the news that day, because it's quite easy to just add, because it doesn't have to rhyme and it doesn't all this, you can just add to that. So one of them that went into the end piece was thou shall not go to an open mic and leave after you've done your shitty little poem or song, you self-righteous prick. Because there was, and that was an actual one where a guy got up and was really annoyed that he was having to be in the second half, and then he got up to do his piece, and it wasn't, he'd translated a poem from Latin or something and was reading his translation of it, which just annoyed me, because it's like, well, you're very clever, congratulations, but yeah. And then he left immediately. So instantly, straight after that, I started doing Thou Shalt and added in that, and that got a big cheer because everyone had been annoyed at him kind of mumbling throughout everyone else's pieces. So yeah, it was that kind of construct that was easy to adapt, easy to... Again, there's a laziness in it. It's that kind of... You can put jokes in and get that crowd reaction without it having to be that deep and meaningful, I guess. And then when we were recording it, I was like, right, here's... Dan sent me a beat, and in the time it took him to watch a 40-year-old virgin. I'd recorded the vocal and sent it back. So whatever the running time of 40-year-old virgin is the session time of that track. And I added the big Just a Band bit in the middle because it seemed to work in that break. And yeah, that's kind of just
that's
how
one
it
of the
came
most
together.
Popular sections for commentators on YouTube.
Yes,
because of course it's like instant button pushing.
Yeah,
instant. It's almost like you're trolling them.
Yeah, and it's so funny because it genuinely never crossed my mind that people would see it as insulting any of these bands.
Yeah.
It's simply stating that, and it came about from one Christmas. It's going to sound a really odd, but one Christmas I started thinking about Tom York,
mm-hmm.
and I thought
that happens every Christmas to me.
Tom York is Tom York.
He's a festive figure.
Yeah, exactly. But he's such a unique, iconic figure.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking of Tom York's brother asking him to pass the potatoes and him getting annoyed because he'd already had enough, and just realizing that, wow, at this time of year, they're all going home to their parents, or a lot of people are going home to their parents, and they're just regular people. They're not this amazing person that you have in your mind. And that's what that section was about. And I purposely chose bands that have really almost over the top obsessive followers, because that seemed to fit with what Cunningham's saying. So the Smiths, they're just, if it didn't have to be catchy and punchy, they're just like four guys who make some really good songs, and then they don't, and then they watch a bit of TV, and then they have their lunch.
Yeah.
And yeah, just trying to get that across. But a lot of people see it as I'm hating on these bands and get very defensive. And
yes, it's such a genius thing for an online audience, because it seems like you've stocked it full of all kinds of things that could be easily misinterpreted.
Yep.
Contradictions within the songs.
Yep.
It's like, you know, don't use the name of these legendary artists in vain, but don't put artists on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And they're like, wait, that's, he's got, what is he contradicting?
And then again, the beautiful irony that some people get on and some look over is it's a 3-minute song telling you what to do, and the last one is Thou Shalt Think for Yourselves. And that wasn't an accident. That's kind of the ultimate overlying irony of the whole thing, of saying, here's what you should do, but ignore all that, just make your own mind up.
Yeah.
But again, the other thing with that track is, as weird as it sounds, when I wrote it and when we recorded it, didn't really think anyone was ever going to hear it. So again, that's the beautiful thing that comes then with this big, when it's then out in the public and so broken down and analysed, you're like, yeah, I didn't expect to come under this scrutiny. I expected to send it to my mate and him go, that's cool, and play it to a few other friends.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that's the beauty of these things spiraling like that.
Yeah, that's the best spirit to create something in any way, isn't it? Just to amuse yourself and to amuse people you like.
Yeah, completely.
Other people, Anna Reed, saying here on YouTube, why must I misspell Phoenix? To which Hugh Rain replies, yeah, I know, it's easy to pick out something in this song that one disagrees with, but I'm with you on this one. What's wrong with spelling something correctly?
That's genuinely one of the ones that's had the most anger, because it is probably the least logical of all of them.
Because in the song, what's the line in the song?
Thou shalt spell the word Phoenix, Pheonix, not Phoenix, regardless of what the English dictionary tells you. And again, there's so many, there's some serious ones, there's some throwaway ones. And that one was one just, it annoys me when words kind of, if the E was first, that would look more like it sounds.
Yeah.
I know it's Phoenix, but Phoenix rather than Phoenix. So it was simply that, just...
just you ego. Railing against the English language.
Yeah, just me just taking it to the English language. and again, that one was one that really... I like them ones because people will get angry and they won't really have any explanation or resolution. It's not like he has a different opinion to me. It's like... What? Why are you? Why have you said this?
Yeah.
Why?
It's spelt. That's how it's spelt. What are you? What the fuck are you doing to the fabric of the fucking universe, you shitbag? We've got enough problems without you coming and trying to get us to spell words that everyone's agreed on the spelling of which correctly. I can't speak properly now.
I never agreed to that spelling, and that's my problem. Yeah. These spellings were agreed upon by someone other than me, and I'm not willing to sit down for that.
No, 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 no,
what's your policy on general rudeness? Are you rude ever? Do you have incidents of rudeness from other people that stick in your mind? Does it bounce off you? Where are you at?
Politeness is genuinely a massive, massive thing to me. If they were to ask that question of how would you like to be remembered, it's like just not remembered for doing anything rude or offensive to people. I really, obviously with friends and in certain situations, there's rudeness and offensiveness is hilarious and hilarity. But yeah, no, in general, I'm a massive fan of politeness. I've worked with some people over the years who have had, again, not that they're bad people in any way, but haven't had or have had blinkers up to sometimes that certain things are really rude and really... really impolite.
I suppose the environment that most people brush up against rudeness is when they're traveling, particularly on trains. That seems to be a place where people, well, they get stressed out and they rub up against each other and then the rudeness comes out.
I struggle on which side is rude when there's someone playing music or being noisy on the train. And I struggle with, am I being rude by attacking them for it? Or are they're being rude for doing it, but am I being ruder in the way I attack or approach them?
Are you being an uptight dick?
So it's a fine balance.
So what's your policy then? Are you going to challenge people?
I have done. I'll be really polite with them. Back to what
you mean. I'm doing it here. Like let's pretend that I got my headphones on.
I'd just be sorry, mate. On the window, this is the quiet zone. So all the other carriages.
Well, got headphones.
It says headphones as headphones and phones. So all the other carriages though are all good, but it's just in this carriage alone.
Come on, mate. I got my headphones on.
Fuck off.
Oh, that escalated quickly.
No, I really. When I worked in HMV again, we're saying about engaging with people earlier. When I worked in HMV, all the staff knew to come to me if there was a rude customer because I'm a massive fan. I'm really good at staying calm and I get off a little bit on killing them with kindness. I really enjoy that. So the customer services people, the HR department, knew my name well because I'd explain, I'm really sorry, I can't do you a refund. You've not got a receipt. There's nothing I can do. But without a refund, I wish I could. I'm not high enough up to be able to authorize that. So here's the phone number though for customer service, blah blah. And they'd often go off, but then sometimes they'd get it cleared. I'd get a phone call from HR going, okay, in this case, we'll just do the refund, and they'll come back in all smug and like, there you go. And I'll be like, I'm so glad you got to sort that out. That's so good. It's so good because it wasn't anything I could do. But I'm so happy for it. And you'd see them getting so annoyed that they wanted to come back in and throw it in your face. You're like, mate, I'm so happy for you. Oh, it really means the world.
Hey, let's hug it out.
This is great news. And they're just... But yeah, I'm a fan of when confronted with rudeness in a work situation to try and
charm
kill
tsunami.
Them with kindness. Yeah.
Definitely. Incidents when you come up against people who are just rude really stay with you because you get that, you know, that thing that happens when you think of the right thing to say afterwards.
Yeah.
Which I think is known as esprit d'escalier.
Yeah.
I.e. the spirit of the stairs.
When you're going down the stairs. It's a staircase remark, isn't it?
I know what to say now to that dick. I was on the train the other day with my family. We were going, we were all going to King's Cross to get the Eurostar. We were going to France. It was exciting. And the train that we were supposed to be going to King's Cross on was cancelled. We had to get the next one half an hour later. So already we were like, this is pushing us very close to the deadline and traveling with my family. This is stressful. So there's twice as many passengers as there should be on this one train. Yeah. So we get on there. Our seats are long gone. The reservations are all out the window. And the train is filling up. There's five of us, me and my wife and our three children. We go over and there's a table of four that is empty except for one guy sat there. Late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah.
He looks a little bit of a hard nut. Right? Yeah. I go over there and I'm carrying my daughter and children are all kind of stressed out because we're stressed out. And I say, excuse me, is there any way that we could take this table? There's a seat just over there if you'd like it. And the guy's like, no, why have I got to move? I say, just because it'd be great for us if we could sit together.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I'm sat here. Well, why should I move? Oh, yeah, just, well, I mean, there's a seat just over there. Well, I don't want to sit there. Like, you know, but the whole train is full anyway, so it's, you know.
You're going to be next to someone.
Someone's going to come and sit here anyway. You'd be doing us a favour if it was us, but. And he goes, nah, I don't think so.
That's infuriating.
And so I just thought, what's the point? And he was looking at me like, you know, you dicks with your families and your children,
how dare you,
ruining the world. And I can slightly relate to that. I remember before I had children, you get slightly annoyed by parents who seem entitled to special treatment.
Yeah, no, I get that.
Oh, I've got children. I've reproduced, and so I should get special treatment. I can appreciate why that's irritating for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, like, it's sort of fun to help people out, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
I always get a little tingle when I see people coming along and it's a couple and they're going to be split up unless I move my seat. And then I'm like, oh, there you go. You can sit together.
Yeah, completely. It's that buzz. You're getting something out of it because you're getting that niceness. They're getting something out of it.
You feel good. This guy, it made me so angry. And I didn't want to cause a scene or get in a Barney with this guy, apart from the fact that it looked as if he could knife me in the throat in under 4 seconds. I didn't want to embarrass my wife and my children, who already looked stressed out. They could see this exchange, and my son, who's like 12, you know, you're getting to that age where it's all like, oh, please don't embarrass us. He looked really anxious about it, like, come on, Dad, let's go. And so I said to the guy, you know, please, honestly, it would just really help us out if we could all sit together, that's all. And he's like, well, no. I don't see why I should. I was like, wow. You're nice, aren't you? And he said, what? I said, you're just a really great guy. God bless you. I don't know why I said that. I think I said it because I knew it would wind him up. I'm not someone who goes around generally saying God bless you and being religious with people. I'm not really a religious person. But I said, God bless you. And sure enough, he just looked like he was about to leap up and punch me right in the face. Yeah. He just said, what did you say? I was like, God bless you. I just ran away. But he was scary.
Yeah.
I swear to God, the look in this guy's eyes, I'm sure he's probably killed people.
Yeah.
I just think, why? You know, okay, you're having a bad day. You don't like little prats.
Again, in that situation, you're not going to be having those 4 seats to yourself. That's just a fact.
Yeah.
The train is going to be full. So it doesn't make a difference.
I know. It crossed my mind, because I'm so stupid and bloody-minded, to actually just sit down.
Yeah.
For me and, like, my wife and one of my sons to just sit down with this guy and stare at him for the rest of the trip and see how it went.
All right. We're friends now.
Yeah.
What's your view? Because, again, on the thing that gets me on rudeness is on social media, on people at replying me when they've got something negative to say, or a conversation that they're just having with their friends.
Yeah.
And again, I'm a big believer in it's perfectly fine to not like me. I'm fine with that. When you're in the public eye in any way, there's people who haven't asked to be exposed to you who are, and they may not enjoy what you're doing, who you are. That's fine. I really haven't got any issue with that. I don't search my name and look for what people are saying about me. But if you tag me, then I find that incredibly rude to just be saying to your mate, oh yeah, I can't stand at Scroobius Pipio. It's like, whoa, hey, why is this happening?
Because it's the most gutless dig that it is possible to make in the modern world. It's like, we've created a brand new medium that enables gutless twats to go around and sort of have a little poke at someone who is, in their mind, maybe higher up the food chain than they are somehow. And it's like, I'm going to show this guy that I think that they're a bit crap, but I'm going to do it with my little fucking made-up pseudonym and under the cloak of anonymity a lot of the time, not always. But and I'm going to do it in this way that they can't really reach out. Yeah, they can come back at me and maybe, well, it's like what I earlier on called trolling or trolling, however you want to pronounce that word. But, you know, it's just trying to get a rise out of someone. Just going up and going, meet, 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 meet.
I went in on someone on it. In defense of someone else once, I was doing a TV show with OJ Borge, And we've been doing a few episodes, and I tweeted saying, oh, the new one's out tonight, and tagged him and tagged everyone. And one person replied saying, I love the show, but can't stand OJ. I find him really annoying, or something just offensive. And I just took OJ and everyone out and just said, that's really fucking rude, man. And the guy came back saying, it's my opinion, entitled to it. And that just was a red rag. So I looked at his profile. I saw that he has he loves his kids. He's a really proud dad. He's all about his family. And I just put a long rant, polite still, again, killing him with kindness. I said, if from what I'm looking at, if you've got kids, I would say a good way to live your life and make your decisions is, what would you advise your child to do in that situation? Or how are you trying to raise your child? So when you send your kid off to school...
You brought his children into it.
Yeah, but I did it politely. I said... when you send your kids off to school, do you say to them, if there's someone at school that you don't like, make sure you let them know you don't like them? If they come home and say to you, oh, I don't like Mary, say, well, you should probably let her know. You should make sure she knows
what
you don't like about her.
Yeah.
You know, I would imagine you don't do that. So if that's not the case, why would you do that? And he came back and really apologised. He said, you're right. You know, he really was like, That's true.
Oh,
I feel
wow.
like an idiot. And it was a good one, because again, I made sure, because I was where I was bringing his family into it, but I was like, I'm going to be 100% polite. I'm not going to be aggressive in any way here. I'm just going to say, look, just have a think about that. Is that what you'd tell your kids to do?
Charm tsunami.
And he came back with saying, you're right, you know, I've not thought about it. You get into social media, you forget there's people on the other end of it. You forget that these are humans and all this. And he then sent OJ about 5 apologies.
Hmm.
And it was a nice win. Yeah, it was creepy.
Yeah.
He's outside his house a lot these days. just sending him flowers.
Sorry.
I really didn't mean it. I find you delightful. I've reevaluated.
I've learned my lesson. I brought my children here to introduce them to you.
I'm teaching them too.
That's good, man. That's
but
great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of my favorite topics, as regular listeners to this podcast will know. The whole business of how we do treat each other online and how we are learning to behave in this new space that we now all occupy.
Yeah.
And it is a strange, painful period of flux.
It's fascinating.
And it's not like I'm some kind of genius who has all the answers, because I've got myself into all sorts of scrapes and will continue to do so, no doubt. Some people are very particular about the etiquette. Someone got in touch with me because they had noticed that I was sometimes retweeting things that people had sent me, but I was removing my name from the retweet or whatever. If it was a conversation, just to save a few characters or whatever, I would remove my name and then maybe put something beforehand, just saying thanks or indeed or I agree or whatever.
Yeah.
And then it would say RT retweet and then the rest of it. But then someone got in touch and said, you are stealing retweets. Because you have modified their tweet, it is now coming up as one of your tweets, and you are getting the retweet action. So you are stealing retweets.
You know retweets aren't monetized, right? There's no...
but it's all glory or status or I don't know what. And they were like, so I had to really stop myself from saying, what? You have lost your fucking mind.
Yeah.
But I said, like trying your charm tsunami, I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. What is the correct procedure in this situation then? And they directed me to a big, long blog post someone had written about all the kind of things you're supposed to not do and you should do. If you do what I was doing in that situation, you're supposed to put MT, modified tweet.
No one knows that.
Yeah.
If I saw MT, I would not know that's... I would assume that's your own tweet.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that elsewhere, and I never knew what it meant.
I would assume that meant my tweet.
Yeah.
So not only are you stealing the retweets, you're stealing the credit.
Or mountain.
Yeah.
So now, if you follow me regularly enough, you will see that I occasionally do an MT.
Wow.
If I'm modifying a tweet, or more often than not, I will no longer comment on someone's tweet for fear of stealing their retweet.
Or they've changed it now, how you can do the retweet and you have the option of putting a comment, if you know what I mean.
Yes, you can.
That's the addition now. You can now actually, you're still tweeting their tweet. It shrinks it almost as if it's a picture you've attached, and you get to add your comment. So I guess that's probably from people like that ranting at people so much. To say,
Because I went back through her timeline and she had a private conversation with a friend of hers going, I can't believe that Adam Buxton steals retweets. It's one of the things that most annoys me on Twitter. And he, of all people doing it, has really disappointed
that's
me.
That's a rabbit hole to fall down, isn't it?
Yeah.
Looking at people's timelines. I always remember there's a great Hannibal...
Time well spent.
A Barres bit where he's saying he's fallen down them kind of routes before, where he's like on Facebook, and I've done this myself, he'll look at how many likes he's got, and then for some reason he'll click on it to see who likes it. And he's like, oh, Mark Smith likes some shit like that, does he? Ah, oh, I see. My son. It's like, yeah, why am I looking at who?
Yeah.
It's like, it's had 700 likes. Who specifically? Which 700 people? Okay, yep.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
That's the thing now with you can drill down into the data for absolutely everything. Yeah, this guy's made a nice comment, but do I care? Let's just profile him.
Let's check him
out. And assess all the things that he likes and doesn't like and see if I should actually care whether he likes my stuff or not.
Turns out I do.
Yeah, turns out that I respect him very, very much. He likes all exactly the same things that I do.
Yeah.
So I will take that compliment and I thank you for it.
It's ridiculous.
Exciting times. Hey, man. I should wrap things up.
Let's wrap things up, because we're going to be going into my podcast with you.
Right. I'm going to get all monosyllabic and depressed now.
Which is exciting. I like the idea of this, because we were talking about if we should or not.
Yes.
Because it's quite intense. But I like the idea of us going a little bit stir crazy and losing it.
See,
and that's
happens.
Why I offered to go last, because this mine could be a lot worse, because we're really losing it and the inability to talk anymore.
All right.
I'm excited about that. But I'm going to... one of the things that we're going to discuss is the time that you met my brother, which you have no idea about. So I just thought I'd put a little teaser in there.
Well,
to
you're
lure
teasing
people.
Your podcast at the end of my one.
I'm clever. I'm used to this social media and media lark.
Thanks, man.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, really good to meet you. I think you and I exchanged glances in the backstage area at the BBC in Glastonbury a few years ago. And so that would have been, 2008. Ages ago.
Yeah.
Like 10 or... You were just starting
out,
I guess.
10, yeah.
But, nice to meet you in person.
And you.
May I say, I find you very good looking.
Thank you very much.
You're a very impressive figure.
Well...
Like, also, you. I like your... that slightly shocking photo of you that you have for your Distraction Pieces podcast of you blowing your brains out with a mic.
Yes, I've been asked by iTunes to change that.
Oh, really?
Because they were doing, again, big love to iTunes. I've been very supportive. But they wanted to push the podcast in a certain area or for something, and they said they needed me to change the image, and I said no.
Yeah,
I'd rather not have the push, because it is just a microphone. It's not an actual. It's a mic, so it's. I don't know.
Yeah,
I wasn't up for. Yeah, for editing
it's
that
good.
In that manner.
You're bare chested. You've got a big tattoo on one side of your torso. There, you're looking angry as anything.
One guy just left a comment when I posted that, just going, why haven't you got a shirt on? And I really didn't have an answer. I didn't see it as a bad thing, because I don't think there's good... people can have no shirts, so I've not got a problem with that. But it was just such a blank, mate.
Yeah, you've left, your shirt off.
Why have you got a shirt off? It's like,
put your shirt there, man.
I'm very sorry.
Come on. And now you're fully nude.
Yes, exactly. As I said, I'm perfectly comfortable with the human form.
I found it a little distracting to begin with. No, I like it.
This is my distraction piece.
Thank you very much. Cheers, Scroobius.
Cheers.
There we go, the charming Scroobius Pip. Thank you very much, Scroobius, for allowing me into your life and your fancy East London hotel room. He doesn't live there. He's an Essex guy, like Garth Jennings. But he was staying there overnight doing a few shows in town. And I went in and we recorded the conversation for my podcast first. Got on my high horse at the end there about the internet. Love the high horses. And then another rambly conversation for his podcast, which will be out sometime next week. Or will already be there if you're listening in the future, i.e. sometime after late October 2015. Scroobius was kind enough to let me use his recording equipment. Although at first I was a little worried the cutoff on his mics was a bit harsh. And then I realised that it was fine. It's a good story though, isn't it? Hey, thank you so much for continuing to comment and get in touch with me with your suggestions and thoughts, etc. Please continue to do so. I appreciate it very much. And obviously continue to subscribe on Acast and iTunes, and, you know, leave positive comments and rate and like. Can't leave any negative comments, because that is not going to prop up my ego in the same way that the really nice ones would. And at the end of the day, that's really what it's all about. I'm desperate to please, but it's a two-way street. Okay, you've got to give me stuff back. And in lieu of cash money, rates, likes, and subscriptions are the modern currency. And if you don't, well, I can find you. Because, as I was saying to Scroobius, we can break down the stats very easily. Look, I can check out right now which territories are currently on board with the Adam Buxton podcast and which ones are flagging. And I can tell you that at number one in the I've listened to the Adam Buxton podcast chart is the United Kingdom. Coming in at number two, the United States of America. Have you ever been to the United States? It's brilliant. They've got incredibly wide streets, which in many regions are paved with gold. And Coca-Cola comes out of the taps, don't know if you knew that, and everyone eats hamburgers and has a gun. And they love listening to the Adam Buxton podcast. Coming in at number three, the good people of Ireland. The bin that never gets full. That's not what I genuinely think of Ireland. That's a reference to a thing, which I hope many of you will know. At number four, Australia. Hello to Australia. Thank you very much for listening. That was good, wasn't it? It was a good shout out. Thank you very much for listening. And after that, things drop off in the rest of the world quite dramatically for the Adam Buxton podcast. Although, you know, there's a few people representing in Finland, Vietnam, Poland, South Africa. It really does cover every single part of the world. No one listening in Iceland, I'm sorry to say. But right down at the bottom, the slackers, the haters, Falkland Islands. Come on, guys. Just two listens in the Falkland Islands. St. Kitts and Nevis, two listens. Madagascar, two listens. Chaps, there's more than just the Garth Jennings one and the Louis Theroux one, all right? The John Ronson one is good too. And so's the one about colds, all right? That's better than you might think. But right down at the bottom, we've got Monaco with one listen. I mean, that doesn't surprise me. They're busy driving around in fancy cars and greasing each other up. I don't know what they do in Monaco. But at the very bottom, below Monaco, Saint-Pierre and Miquelon. That's disappointing, because I had planned a big tour of Saint-Pierre and Miquelon for next year, and now I see that there's just one person there who doesn't even like the show. They've just listened once and thought, fuck this, eh? This is boring, eh? I'm trying to do a mixture of French and Canadian there. Because that's where... I used to think that Saint-Pierre and Miquelon was this kind of sunny, tropical paradise, or maybe somewhere out in the Indian Ocean. But that's because I'm ignorant. Actually, it's just off the coast of Canada. And it seems to be an exciting place. Here's some things to do in Saint-Pierre and Miquelon. You can visit L'Arche, the Arch Museum. L'Arche Museum. The well-done exhibits cover the island's history, including Prohibition times. The showstopper is the guillotine, the only one to slice in North America. Islanders dropped the timbers of justice just once in 1889 on a murderer. The museum also offers bilingual architectural walking tours. The timbers of justice, is that a good nickname for a guillotine? Surely the metal blade part is really more important than the timber. I don't think anyone's too worried about the timbers, are they? It's the blade you have to watch out for more than anything. The blade of badness. Anyway, come on, Saint-Pierre and Miquelon. Stick with it. It gets better. And that goes for you too. Take care, fellows. Human fellows. Thanks for listening.
I love you, bye!
This is an advert for Squarespace. Hey guys, it's Broshak with me, Paul Broshak. We got Mike here. We're going to talk about his new MMA comedy special. We're going to talk about his view counts, and we're going to talk about conspiracy theories. What's up, Mike?
Hello, Paul.
Hey, brother.
I'm fine, thank you. I don't want to talk about any of those things anymore.
You don't?
No. I want to talk about... I built a website, Paul.
All right. Stream some fights, settle some beefs, stick it to the elites, that kind of thing.
No. It's mainly dog pictures, Paul. And I did it on Squarespace. Have you heard of Squarespace? I went to squarespace.com/Buxton and I did a free trial. And I tried some of the beautiful templates, Paul, and I typed things in. I dragged in pictures of the dogs. And before I knew it, I had a website, Paul. So I bought it and I've made some very sweet dog t-shirts and I sell those on the shop on the website.
Uh-huh. But do you still fight and stuff?
A little bit, but not really. Oh, and Paul, I wanted to tell you that when it comes time to buy your website or domain on Squarespace, if you use the offer code Buxton, you save 10%. Paul.
Thanks, Mike. Where'd you do that free trial?
Squarespace.com/Buxton.
And how sweet were the dogs?
Very.
They handed me my ass. Hey, would you like an ass, they said. I said, oh yes, please, thank you. Take a closer look at the ass, they said. You can see the marks where we spanked you. 'Cause they handed me my ass, that's right. They handed me my ass. I thought it was a brand new ass, but it was just my old ass. It was just my ass, it was just my ass. It was just my ass, my old ass. It was just my ass, it was just my ass. It was just my same old ass.
You gotta do the accent, I think. I don't know, maybe not. I'll leave that up to the cast to decide.